Greet you in Jesus' name this morning. I'm thankful this morning that that God answers prayer as well. And he gave us a message from his word today. He did not have to give us a message, me in particular, but he did. For a title, I struggled with this one because you can name it whatever you wish, but what I have is stewardship defined. And the definition of the dictionary of stewardship is this, or the ones I chose, the top two. A person who manages another's property or financial affairs. One who administers anything as the agent of another or others. And also a person who has charge of the household of another, buying or obtaining food, directing servants, etc. Now, before we go into that any further, we need to get a foundation. What I consider a foundation to understanding what a steward is and understanding ownership. We just got done reading, a steward is someone who manages another's property. I was going to turn to some verses, but we don't have the time because I have more pages than I normally should have. So I'm going to read a number of verses. I'll give you references as I go. But when we consider ownership, divine ownership, it takes me to one person, that is Creator God. And so as we think of, I'm going to just read a number of verses. Nehemiah 9:6. Thou, even thou, art Lord alone. Thou hast made heaven, the heaven of heavens, with all their hosts, the earth and all things that are therein, the seas and all that is therein. And thou preservest them all, and the host of heaven worshipeth thee. Psalm 33:6-9. By the word of the Lord were the heavens made, and all the hosts of them by the breath of his mouth. He gathereth the waters of the sea together as in heap. He layeth up the depth in storehouses. Let all the earth fear the Lord. Let all the inhabitants of the world stand in awe of him. For he spake, and it was done. He commanded, and it stood fast. And I wanted to say, we could spend all morning just reading verses. So I just pulled out a few. Psalm 50:10. For every beast of the forest is mine, and the cattle upon 1,000 hills. Psalm 102:25. Of old hast thou laid the foundation of the earth, and the heavens are the work of thy hands. Psalm 146:5. Happy is he that hath the God of Jacob for his help, whose hope is in the Lord, which made heaven and earth, the sea and all that is therein, which keepeth truth forever. That was verse 6 as well. That was focusing more on creator of the universe. Now thinking of more of creator of mankind, Genesis 1:26, and God said, let us make man in our image after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over all, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. Genesis 2:7, and the Lord formed man of the dust of the ground, and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living soul. Psalm 24:1, the earth is the Lord's, and the fullness thereof, the world, and they that dwell therein. Psalm 100:3, know ye that the Lord, he is God. It is he that hath made us, and not we ourselves. We are his people, and the sheep of his pasture. Isaiah 51:12-13, I, even I, am he that comforteth you. Who art thou that thou shouldest be afraid of a man that shall die, and of the son of man which shall be made as grass? And forgettest the Lord thy maker, that hath stretched forth the heavens and laid the foundations of the earth? We're just going to stop with our list. You can turn to Colossians 1 a while. So all the verses that I read reference, and there's many more, that reference God as creator, that show us who the creator is, and explained that everything that is around us today, everything, is because of a creator. And again, divine ownership. John 1:3 says, all things were made by him, and without him was not anything made that was made. Again, not difficult to understand. All things were made by him, and anything you see around us was made because God said it could be made. Without him was not anything made that was made. So rightful ownership goes to the creator. Years ago, oh my, it's probably 20 years ago, Maytag Neptune washers had a problem, and they needed an update kit because when they went in a rinse cycle, they had some issues. We needed to change it. And I got involved with changing a number of update kits on the washer. Now, it's not interesting, but Maytag didn't go to Frigidaire and say, fix our problem for us. They didn't call out to Whirlpool, whatever. They fixed their own problem. Now, I know a poor illustration. But the one who created the world and all that is therein is also the one responsible for the world and all that is therein. Colossians 1, I'm just going to read verses 16 and 17. For by him were all things created that are in heaven and that are in earth, visible and invisible, whether they be thrones or dominions or principalities or powers. All things were created by him and for him. And he is before all things, and by him all things consist. Consist is the word I want to pull out, although 16 kind of just reemphasizes verses that I already read. All things were created by him and for him. Again, some key truths that I can't explain any clearer than what the Bible makes them right here and what we have them. But he is before all things, and by him all things consist. I like to think of consist as God or Jesus Christ is the glue that holds things together. Or you could also say it's the lubricant that's in the gearbox that makes things flow and operate smoothly. In fact, Jesus says this in John 15, verse 5, I am the vine, ye are the branches. He that abideth in me and I in him, the same bringeth forth much fruit. For without me ye can do nothing. So that's even a step further. We have divine ownership, but now God says, or Jesus says, you can do nothing without me. I know, very simple, but very profound. I guess it's so clear to me because I am so much in control, I think, of so many things. So because of these things, all mankind are stewards of God's ownership. And it's something that we so readily, so easily forget. I do. Perhaps you do too. What is a steward? A person, I'm going to just give this definition again, a person who manages another's property or financial affairs. One who administers anything as the agent of another or others. A person who has charge of a household of another, buying or obtaining food, directing servants, etc. All mankind are stewards of God's ownership. I am called on to manage another's property or financial affairs. For without me ye can do nothing. And forgettest thou the Lord thy Maker? We go back through and read this all over again. We're not going to. I'd like you to turn now to Luke chapter 19. This perhaps could have taken a month of Sundays to talk about. Luke 19, and we're just going to read verses 11 to 27. Now, I want us to understand, just know a few things. The setting is, in the earlier part of Luke chapter 19, is the story of Zacchaeus. And what happened with Zacchaeus. That was an actual happening. Now, this goes into a parable. This is a parable, and we were taught in school years ago that a parable is an earthly story with a heavenly meaning. Forget what grade it was, but we were drilled on that. There's other times that Jesus said, the kingdom of heaven is like unto, and he went on to tell a story. And I discovered, what I didn't know before, is that many of them are in Matthew. I guess Matthew chose to write that way. Other gospels might say it's a parable. So understand me, this is a parable. Now we're going to read verses 11 through 27. And as they heard these things, he added and spake a parable, because he was nigh to Jerusalem, and because they thought that the kingdom of God should immediately appear. He said, therefore, a certain nobleman went into a far country to receive for himself a kingdom, and to return. And he called his 10 servants and delivered them 10 pounds, and said unto them, Occupy till I come. But his citizens hated him, and sent a message after him, saying, We will not have this man to reign over us. And it came to pass that when he was returned, having received the kingdom, then he commanded these servants to be called unto him to whom he had given the money, that he might know how much every man had gained by trading. Then came the first, saying, Lord, thy pound hath gained 10 pounds. And he said unto him, Well, thou good servant, because thou hast been faithful in a very little, have thou authority over 10 cities. And the second came, saying, Lord, thy pound hath gained 5 pounds. And he said likewise to him, Be thou over 5 cities. And another came, saying, Lord, behold, here is thy pound, which I have kept laid up in a napkin. For I feared thee, because thou art an austere man. Thou takest up that thou layest not down, and reapest that thou didst not sow. And he saith unto him, Out of thine own mouth will I judge thee, thou wicked servant. Thou knewest that I was an austere man, taking up that I laid not down, and reaping that I did not sow. Wherefore then gavest not thou my money unto the bank, that at my coming I might have required mine own with usury? And he said unto them that stood by, Take from him the pound, and give it unto him that hath 10 pounds. And they said unto him, Lord, he hath 10 pounds. For I say unto you that unto every one which hath shall be given, and from him that hath not, even that he hath shall be taken away from him. But those mine enemies which would not that I should reign over them, bring hither and slay them before me. And we'll stop there. There are 2 main categories of people that I see in this parable. The one is the servants of the nobleman. And you can see it says he had 10 servants that he gave 10 pounds, each a pound. And there's also what it calls the citizens. Verse 14, it says, But his citizens hated him. So there were citizens that were around there as well. There were 3 groups of people here in this story, in this parable, that were responsible to the nobleman. And the one I will call the sincere follower of Jesus. Again, a servant, but sincere follower of Jesus. And there was 2 of them. I don't know how many out of his 10 were, but it pulled out 2 of them. The one that was given 1 pound and gained 10, and the other that was given 1 pound and gained 5 pounds. There's also the selfish follower of Jesus, the selfish servant, that said he just kept that pound, and he wrapped it up in a napkin and just put it away till the nobleman returned. There's also what I believe here, the Jews that rejected him. The citizens were likely the people that were around that had not chosen to follow Jesus, but they were the citizens that had already rejected him. We see here that when he got back, when this nobleman got back here in this parable, verse 15, I think, it came to pass when he returned, they commanded these servants to be called. He called his servants and told them, I'm sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself. Before he ever left, he called his servants together and said, I'm going away to receive a kingdom. He says that in verse 13. He said, I'm going to leave. I'm going away, but you should occupy till I come. He said, I'm going to leave everything with you. I'm putting it in my own words. I'm leaving everything with you. Take care of it, and I'm coming back. I'm going to return sometime. And he gave them money, and he said, occupy, verse 13, till I come. And that word occupy means to busy oneself or to trade. And these men, these servants, were to actually use that money and to be busy with it and to trade. And we would say today they were to invest this money. They would invest this pound. And then he left. And there were citizens that also declared that they had no interest in this new man reigning over them, because it was clear to them in this parable, it was clear to these groups that he had left. The story that Jesus was telling, that he had left to receive a kingdom. And they said they didn't want to have him reign over them when he returned. But when he returned, it says that his servants didn't even know it right away. And he called for them, and he asked them to give account for what had happened with his money. And first of all, we have the account, we have the servants that were faithful, and then we also have the unfaithfulness. And then we also have the removing and giving to the faithful. When the unfaithful servant came, he took the pound that he had and gave to the faithful ones. So what did this mean to the listeners, to the men that were standing around, to the people that were listening to this parable? Again, this is a story that was just a story, but it had carried deep kingdom meaning. I believe that he was teaching them that they are stewards, number one. That he was teaching this, these, likely his disciples were around there, at least a number of them had to be, had been, because of what had just occurred. The story, the happening, they were passing through Jericho and they met up with Zacchaeus, and this was immediately following that. I believe he was teaching them about stewardship. Now what they had was the Creator's. What they had was actually his, Jesus Christ. I believe he was also touching the hearts of the doubting Jews that were standing around there, referring to them as the citizens that hated him. He was referring to these Jews that were doubting. But he was also attempting to touch the hearts of these Jews. They were probably the ones that were upset with how he related to Zacchaeus. And he says, this man even eat with sinners, I think it says in one of the Gospels. Maybe it's even here in Luke. The Jews that he was referring to were the ones that were rejecting the nobleman that was speaking to them, Jesus being the nobleman. So how can we apply this to today? How can we apply this today in our own lives, in our own experience, in our own place that we find ourselves in the kingdom? Nothing that we have is ours. And I'm probably going to say this again, maybe too many times, but nothing that we have is ours. Nothing, in capital letters. The only exception might be a reputation. I didn't think much real long about that, but maybe the reputation you have might be your own. But nothing that you have is ours. And I'm thinking of, and I'm not thinking strictly about money and possessions. That's not what I'm thinking of. I mean, that's part of it, but it's not strictly the focus. And since I have nothing, what I think I have is actually the property of the nobleman. What you think you have is actually the property of the nobleman. It's not yours. I am just a steward. I am only a steward because nothing is mine. You see? But I am a steward. And I don't know if I can say that emphatic enough, but I am a steward because the nobleman left and he's coming back. And there's been things that have been trusted into my care and to your care. I'm just a steward, but I am a steward. I don't know if you can feel the difference. We are all, one way or another, responsible to the nobleman. In this account, the nobleman gave equally to each of his servants that were there. He didn't give anything to the citizens, but he gave to equally to his servants. There are no exceptions. All mankind have a responsibility to the nobleman. Not just the servants, but also the citizens. And we can see that at the end of the parable, where he said in verse 27, bring them and slay them before me. We'll get back to that a little later. You know what is awesome when you think about it? What's awesome when I think about it? Or maybe it's mind-boggling, is that the Creator who made us, first of all, the Creator who made us, then turned around and he redeemed us. He bought us as well. You know, that just doesn't seem right. It really doesn't seem right that the one by virtue of him being Creator should have to turn around and buy us yet. First Corinthians 6:20, for ye are bought with a price. Therefore glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's. Again, we can't get away from it. It's not ours, it's God's. So we are twice owned. That's who I am. He made me, first of all, and then he went turned around and paid for me yet. For me to be his. And I'm humbled by this. And I'm very indebted because of this. So back to applying this endeavor, trying to apply this parable to today, to us today. God has given to us to take care of till he returns, till he comes back, or till he calls us out. What has he given to us to occupy? If you have nothing, if I have nothing, I have a random list. He has given us our physical bodies. It's not my own. He says, another place he says, our bodies are the temple of the Holy Ghost. He says, and also we've just read in verse 1 Corinthians 6:20, you're bought with a price. Glorify God in your body and spirit, which are God's. It's not mine. So how do I care for my body? Whether you overwork your body or whether you underwork your body. Remember, I am but a steward. I am but a caretaker of God's property, of God's ownership. How about if I overeat or if I undereat? It affects us both ways. Whether I live dangerously or whether I live carefully. And you could probably put anything else in there. Let me just give you, I'm not one for personal examples, but I'm going to do it. Again, my body is God's body. God owns my body. That's why it'd be wrong for me to do something about my lack of hair. That wasn't what I was going to say. What I was going to say is this. A number of years ago, I started giving blood. Red Cross giving blood. Now, that's not for everybody. I don't even know if it's for me. I don't really enjoy giving blood. It's not something I just can't wait till the 8 weeks rolls around and now I'm eligible to go give blood again. But my body is God's body. And because he gave me plenty of blood and I always have plenty high iron counts, do I owe it? Am I being a steward? Should I not be a steward by giving blood? I know it's probably a silly example to you, but I'm just saying, when you take this and follow this string the whole way, what really do I have? I have nothing that is mine. I'm but a steward. That's why, it's one of the reasons I give blood, because I can give that. What about our possessions? Our house, our vehicles, our clothing? These are not ours. These are God's. So how does the nobleman wish for you to acquire these things and to take care of them? Maybe I'm oversimplifying it, but I really have again revisited the need for myself to look at these things in a simple form, and it does us all good. It will affect what you do to your house, what you do around your house. It will affect what vehicle you buy. It will affect what clothing you purchase, because we're going to talk in a little bit about the money we have is not ours, it's God's. How does a nobleman wish for you to acquire the things that we need and how we take care of them? What about our time? The 24 hours in a day are really for God to use, aren't they? You know, if he asks you to sleep just 4 hours tonight, that's okay. I don't think God will require you to sleep 4 hours only or to be sleepless for very long, because he also wants you to take care of your body. But if he does what we call interrupts our schedule tomorrow, is this okay? Is it okay if God interrupts your schedule? No, whose schedule was it? Whose time is it? Or does it cause me some frustration? When I look back over a day and cannot see what I've physically accomplished, is that okay? I say yes, it is, if we're pleasing the nobleman. If we've served the nobleman, it's okay. When you think about our time, do you think any of the servants would have done something different if the nobleman would have been looking over their shoulder? Do you think that's that servant that took and wrapped that pound and put it to the side and saved, do you think they had done anything differently if the nobleman would have been standing right there? What would I do differently with my time if Jesus was standing right next to me? What would you do different if he was just peering over your shoulder all the time? Would you do anything different? Again, we are stewards of God's time. It's serious. Another thing we're stewards of, I shouldn't call it a thing, but our children. Children are given to us, they're loaned to us by God. Do we treat and care for them in this way? Do you treat your children as though they're God's property? The gravity of this situation or this gift is that these gifts in particular will spend eternity somewhere. Your vehicle will not. But this gift of children, this item that's loaned to us by God, I don't mean to minimize our families by calling them an item, but we must carefully care for them. And God gives us clear instruction on how to raise families and what to do about it. And parents, do we give our families the attention we should give? And I know I'm should be holding the mirror right here and not seeing anybody else, but are we giving our families the attention that they should? When I say that God gives these children to us to care for him and we must be caring for them, he expects us to follow his word in raising them. It's just as important to love your child as it is to lovingly discipline them and correct them and bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Or are there other work or interests that take us away from your responsibility? The world says, hire a babysitter and go on dates alone together. That's what the world says. Is this God's way? When the nest begins to empty, there's usually time that you are released from the demands of child raising. What about your energy? Another gift from God. No, another item of God that we are called to be stewards of. Some have more than others. Do you regularly come to church tired? Do you have energy for work or recreation, but not for Bible Explorers or Sunday afternoon Epworth Manor or Wednesday evening cottage meeting, and you can put anything else in the list? Again, whose energy is it? What am I telling the nobleman when I feel too spent for kingdom work? How about our money? All of us have some, and some of us have more than others. So how should we use the nobleman's money? How does he want us to save it? What does he want us to save it for? Does he even want us to save it? Where does he want you to give it? I know it's a lot of questions, but I want us to think about even the very billfold that you have in your hip pocket that may have a couple dollars in it is really God's money. We are taking care of it. How about our talents and our abilities? Are you using them to honor the king? Or are you using them to try and build up self? Are you cultivating them to become a more profitable servant? With gifts like this, I think it's serious, and many of these other things we talked about are serious, because God doesn't give us all the same. I know the talents that the nobleman handed out, the pounds, he gave them each a pound. But the talents and abilities that God gives us today, we're not all given the same thing. But when he gives us a talent, he intends for us to bring honor and glory to him by using it. And if you're given a gift, but you let it wrapped neatly and lying on the shelf, how does that affect the giver? I don't know if any of us have ever done anything like that in a real life. But have I ever done that with the talent or the ability that God gives to me? Just let it wrapped up, lying on the shelf? So as with perhaps all the areas that he gives us to care for, if we don't use them, again, he says to occupy, which is to use them, then no man will leave us lean and unfulfilled, just like that unfaithful servant. He did not use that, and he was lean and unfulfilled. We may feel like we're serving God. He was still called a servant of the nobleman. And we may still feel like we're serving God, but yet we may feel empty. We still are empty, even though we say we're serving God on the one hand. Verse 26. Verse 26 says, that every one which hath shall be given, and from him that hath not, even that he hath shall be taken away. So even from him that had not built on that pound, they took away from him. He was left lean and unfulfilled because he did not use what God had given him. If you're left lean and unfulfilled or feel empty, this may be because we're going against the desire of the nobleman for something in our life. Some area in our life you may be going against what the nobleman, what Jesus Christ has chosen for you. I don't know how to explain the varying amounts of return that nobleman got when he came back. I know some of the other parables you read, he gave the one 2 and it became 5, and 5 and it became 10 or something like that when he has the talents. But in this one, it says he gave them 1 pound. The varying amount of return from the faithful ones may be because of the risks that they took for the kingdom. And maybe I'm stepping out on a limb too far. This is also a bad comparison, but I think it makes a little bit of a point. And that is, in the financial world, the highest return in financing is also the highest gain. I mean, the highest return is also the highest risk. It gives the highest return. The highest potential return usually comes from the greater risk. I think perhaps the man that brought back 10 talents may have risked himself for the kingdom. And I believe that living in America with few risks to the Christian life, I think we may be fortunate if we were in this story if we received 5 talents. When I think about around the world, the people that are risking their very life for the kingdom is not something you and I are doing. I know we're not called to do it. This man that received 5 talents was not scolded in any way. He was still a faithful servant, just like the one that received 10 pounds. I cannot speak for the nobleman, but we have in many ways been given more than 1 pound to occupy here in America with all that we have laid before us. And to me, it's scary to assess our performance in light of being a steward of the nobleman's things. Culture is pressuring us greatly. And I just say we've got to, yeah, we just cannot be too careful. You pick up literature, no matter what you look at, it runs counter to this idea, not this idea, it runs counter to this truth, this fact, that everything that we have is not ours and we are but stewards. No, we are stewards. Pressure around us is to be taking care of yourself, pampering yourself, taking care of these things because they're yours. They're nobody else's. It's your time. And the list can go on. That is false, false, false. And it will lead you down. It will lead you into emptiness. It will lead you into dissatisfaction time and time again. When the nobleman returns, all will be held accountable to him for what we've done with the things, with the items that he tells us to occupy, that he's given to you. This parable makes it clear that just because of the fact that he is a creator, all are responsible to him. In the end, all will give account to God. Not just the servants. Not just the faithful servants, not just the unjust or the foolish servant, whatever you want to call him. But also the citizens, the ones that have rejected him, will also give account to him. The selfish ones, those that have rejected, the unfaithful, but also the faithful. Because verse 27 gives us the sobering account. But those mine enemies, which would not that I should reign over them, bring hither and slay them before me. All mankind will give account to God. Let us be faithful stewards of all of God's ownership. Let's kneel for prayer.